Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to Blizzard Watch, the podcast where we watch Blizzard. We watch them like hawks, constantly watching, waiting for even a momentary sign of weakness, and then we will tell you about it on the weblog. That's what we do. Sorry, it's not as dramatic as I hoped. I'm Matt Rossi. I'm the host. With me this week, I'm trying to think of a better metaphor because I've been using the same ones a lot. I'm going to say imminent, completely imminent, not imminent, imminent, slightly different. Look it up. Co-hosts, losing it this week. First up, because I don't introduce her first enough, Anne Stickney. Anne, tell us about how you forced people to watch a movie.
Hi. So this weekend, me, Mitch, and Liz have been doing this podcast for the tavern called Swords and Shields, and we've been mostly talking about Mass Effect. Mitch just finished Mass Effect 2, and he was about to start Mass Effect 3, but I couldn't let him start Mass Effect 3 without watching the cinematic achievement that is Mass Effect Paragon Lost, so we all sat down and watched it on Saturday. It was great. And
The fact that you can force people to do these things from distance. I have to be right in a room with someone to make them watch a movie, but you can do it over hundreds of miles.
I didn't have to force too hard. I just said it's like important to the story and understanding the people in Mass Effect 3 that you watch this thing. And they said, okay. So, and Liz already had it. She just hadn't watched it yet. So I just had to get Mitch to get it, and he got it. And since I already have it, we all just kind of sat down and watched it.
It was great. You guys should have riffed. Did you record like a riff of it?
We did. Okay. We just had yesterday we had like our episode three, I think, of the podcast come out. And then in 2 weeks we'll be releasing the riff track as podcast episode 4. So if you ever wanted to watch Funimation, and this particular movie, if you're familiar with Mass Effect, you should totally like watch it. And you hit play when we hit play, and then it's like we're there watching along with you forever and always, being obnoxious.
The fact that you got them to watch that movie in of itself is just an achievement, in my opinion. I couldn't get my wife to watch that movie, and she loved Mass Effect.
It's not a bad movie. You have to get past the whole animation aspect and get into the story bit, and like, once you make it past the first 10 minutes or so and it actually gets into the real story, that's when it gets interesting. It's like, oh, things are happening. Oh, this is all bad all around. And then, yeah, it's great. I especially love the last 5 minutes, which is basically one of the characters going crazy with grief for like 5 minutes. He's going to scream and cry a lot.
We've established that Anne likes people suffering.
Yeah. That's why I like also,
also with us this week is the editor-in-chief of Blizzard Watch and the guy who is correct in his observations of Daredevil Season 2's plot, much to my chagrin, Alex Zibart.
Hello.
Yeah, how goes? I hate admitting you're right, but yeah, you were right.
all those Netflix shows. Beginning is really good. Middle's pretty terrible. The end is all right.
Okay. So this week, we'll just move into the top stories because we could talk about Daredevil too long and we, you know, have a show to do.
We've done that already stories in the pre-show. So
just go listen to that.
20 minutes of you people talking about that show.
So us people. Anyway, so this week, top stories. First top story I was going to mention actually came out after I'd written the email. So Blizzard has announced their partnering with Scholastic. Am I correct in this saying Scholastic?
Yes.
Yes.
And then they went out and got the guy behind Gargoyles and Young Justice, Greg Wiseman, to write World of Warcraft Traveler, which is, near as I can tell from the promotional video, a series of young adult books?
Yep.
Children's books.
It's children, young outright adult. Children's. Well, I don't know. All I know is it's Scholastic. It's not, to be honest, it wasn't something I expected, but then once I remembered that book they did a couple years back, the kids' book.
Snowfight.
Tiny Arthas and stuff.
Snowfight, yeah. Yes.
Snowfight. Once I remember they'd done that, this seemed like not so strange a thing to do. But anyway, yeah, World of Warcraft Traveler, it's, I didn't, like...
Oh, it is children's book, because it's ages 8 to 12. Okay.
Yeah, it's a children's book.
They said young adult in the video, in the announcement video. So that's why I was like, okay.
But at any rate, yeah, basically it's about Aram, I think his name is, son of a famous explorer. And I'm hoping it's not Bran Bronzebeard, because that would just be weird.
No. And he looks strangely like young Varian Wrynn.
Yeah, right. Well. But no, he's the son of an explorer, and he goes to join him on like this trip or whatever, and I don't know. Anyway, things happen, and Aram is left to his own devices with nothing but a magic compass that should be pointing the way home, but isn't for some reason. And it kind of takes him all over Azeroth instead, which sounds like a really cool premise for a series. And yeah, it sounds cool to me. It's like big major lore figures so much as it is about this kid who's wandering around Azeroth, which is pretty cool.
See, I'll admit that at first I was kind of like, what is this? I don't know. This doesn't sound like anything I care about. But like, then they're like, Greg Wiseman. I'm like, okay, if Greg Wiseman's writing it, I know it's going to end up.
If he's writing it, you're on board automatically. Yeah. I mean, come on. Gargoyles.
Like, yeah, I mean, Gargoyles was great. Young Justice was great. He's, you know, even when he's done stuff I haven't thought was as good, it's usually quality. And I knew as soon as like they announced his name that my wife was going to be like, oh yeah, we're getting that. So yeah there you go. That's the first top story of the day. That's coming out. That seems really interesting because it's very much they're diversifying what they do pretty hard with Warcraft. Between the movie coming out, between this book series, between Chronicle and other things that are, you know, the switch to when they're publishing their books. The Illidan book is coming out soonish. So yeah, they're definitely diversifying and stepping up their media game.
It's the next step in that evolution, because it was like when World of Warcraft first came out, it was like you got a novel every now and again. And then somewhere in the middle of that shifted, and then they started introducing the comic series. And then it shifted again, and we got like the short stories on the website. There was a lot of them. And then like digital comics, and then, you know, some graphic novels. That kind of, it's just, like I said, it's part of that whole evolution of how they're presenting their story. So I think that's pretty cool.
I'm not too surprised by them trying to do kid books again. They've tried it before. And again, I'm not surprised they're doing it again because all of these guys who work on this stuff, they have kids. No.
Yeah.
And I think we sometimes see their how they approach things shift based on how old their kids are, how they deal with their kids. And we see that in their work a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Like when Thrall had kids in World of Warcraft, I completely expect that this was done because these guys who write these stories wanted to write their experiences into a story. So them now doing kids' books is not surprising to me.
It looks like a cool story, though.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they do with it. Again, Greg Wiseman, you know, I'll give him plenty of time to show me what he wants to do. Also this week, I think of as we're recording this, it should be out, shouldn't it? The Nova Covert Ops for StarCraft 2 should be out.
Yeah, there's three mission packs, and the first of three releases today.
What time?
Has already released today. I think it launched with the maintenance this morning, so it should be playable right now.
Cool.
So you've been playing StarCraft to get ready for it, right, Alex?
Yeah, I finally finished Legacy of the Void just last night for this thing. And I wanted to play Comfort Ops like as soon as it went live. I have not had a chance to sit down and do that yet today.
But that's today. So, you know, StarCraft fans rejoice. You finally kind of get the Nova game that you were promised oh so many years ago.
Yeah, Nova even has, like, jokes about her canceled game in Heroes of the Storm. When you click on her, she'll crack jokes about how her game got canceled and so forth.
Yeah, I did find out. I wasn't aware her first name was November. That's news to me.
Yeah.
Her name is November Terra.
Everybody has weird names in StarCraft. All the Terran people do.
Jim Raynor doesn't.
Well, Jim Raynor doesn't, but it's a lot of, like... they pull from the southern areas of the U.S. for their, like, for StarCraft Terran, right? So the normal people, like James Raynor, they just have kind of normal names. It's like James and Matt Horner and so forth. But the high society people have very strange names, like November and Annabelle and Arcturus and Valerian. So, and November is from, like, a high society family.
Okay. November Terra, yes.
I think her full name, if I recall, is November Annabella Terra.
Wow. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it's at the cotillion. I do declare we're being zerged.
Cotillion.
Oh my diddly dee, we're being zerged.
I think she fits in just fine with mouthfuls like Arcturus Mengsk and Valerian Mengsk.
See, that's different because those are the Mengsk is a very Slavic sounding name. I don't know if it actually is a Slavic name, but it sounds Slavic. So that's different than when you say they have southern sounding names. Now all I can picture is seriously like, oh, it's a nuclear launch detected. I do say. And so forth. Now the people from the south are like, my God, his accent's horrible.
That's StarCraft. It's all southern folk in space.
It's space cowboys. The Wild West in space.
But yeah, I'm from New England, so yeah, you're not going to get a good accent out of me.
And then you have Stukov, who's Stukov. Not southern.
What's his name? Cigar chomping guy from the StarCraft 2 trailer?
Tychus.
Tychus Finley.
Finley.
Alexei Stukov. So they have... like Russian or Slavic or something in there, whatever Stukov is supposed to be.
Also, though, this week, I remember logging into work yesterday and talking to Liz about it for a while. The most recent Warcraft trailer actually seems to have reveals for Medivh and Khadgar.
Yep.
Which is pretty cool. I didn't get a chance to see this because it was taken down, but I was looking at these stills and all I could think of was, wow. Khadgar, you're certainly doing battle with Photoshop filters there, aren't you? It was very hard to see what was going on, so
it's actually been released.
Okay, it's out now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's today it officially went up on YouTube.
Good.
And it's much more effective seeing it in motion.
I would think so, yeah. That's the problem with looking at stills of anything. It's like, you know, seeing stills of a guy swooping down on a griffin to, like, you know, attack an orc looks really dumb. It's just a still of these bird claws going at the orc going,
It looks really good in motion.
I think the Warcraft movie will be a fine movie. I think all the marketing for it has been silly. I'm not buying it.
It's one commercial.
I'll see the movie, but the marketing seems silly.
The trailer I saw in front of Batman v Superman seemed fine, but it's just a straightforward trailer of orcs fighting humans. It doesn't really try very hard. It's like, here's the thing.
The official movie account on Twitter is basically just full of really bad MMO jokes from people who only half understand what a video game is. Instead of promoting the movie, they're like, orc aggro incoming, get the tank. Shut up.
No, they deleted that tweet.
It was bad.
They deleted that tweet. It's probably a good thing that they deleted that tweet, because whoever, like, put the picture together, I don't know what crazy font they were using, but it just looked bad.
Like, they're trying to have all the hip video game memes, and they don't really get it.
Yeah, no.
But, yeah, people were actually seemed interested when I went, like I said, during the film, when I was sitting down the promo show, people were like, ooh, Warcraft. And I know that not that the people in the theater weren't all Warcraft players, although I'm sure some of them were.
Yeah, there has been interest among the non-Warcraft playing members of my family, which is like everyone but me. So that's good.
Yeah, the marketing, it was just mentioned in our chat, the marketing for the Warcraft movie has been so embarrassing. Duncan Jones himself, the director, has been on Twitter being like, yeah, I don't really like how they're marketing this, but whatever. If the director is like, eh, maybe you're doing something wrong.
Then again, you get situations like when the director of a movie comes out after the movie releases and goes, "They ruined my movie."
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Fantastic Four.
Didn't the same thing happen with the Green Lantern? Like Ryan Reynolds agreed to do Green Lantern because the script was really good, but the studio turned it into an abomination.
Well, that's to the point where Ryan Reynolds has done promos for Deadpool making fun of Green Lantern.
In Deadpool, there's like a line where he says, "Just don't make it green or animated." if you give me a super suit, don't make it green or animated. And it was like a throwback to, yeah, that movie really sucked.
I hear you. Although, quite frankly, Ryan, if you're going to make fun of movies you did, rest in peace, department.
Yeah.
You've done some bad movies, Ryan.
That looked like it was going to be fun.
Then again, you're still, you know, wealthy, way handsomer than I'll ever be in my life, and incredibly successful, so don't sweat it too much.
I think ghost cops is a genre that has been woefully underappreciated.
Ghost.
That's
cops?
Because it's never like, very like rarely do we have ghost cops.
Officers that are ghosts or guys that like arrest ghosts.
Both.
Oh, okay.
Because REPD is actually above. They are ghosts that cop.
Like ghost cops is fun, but every movie they've made about it has been terrible.
Okay then.
But. Now we're going to move on to emails because we can't just talk about ghost cops. I mean, we could. I could just let Alex go and that would be
we
the podcast.
Could.
But we're not going to do that. If you have an email for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. We'd be more than happy to hear about any topic, be it like, you know, rogue PvP mechanics, which these two would attempt to answer, or anything else. You know, hey, just a crazy thought. You could ask a question about warriors. I know a little something about those guys. But whatever you want to talk about, mages or lore or the movies or, you know, how come we never talk about X book that you really like? Because we covered that last week. We didn't talk about
or
that
Overwatch.
Because...
You can ask us about Overwatch. I like
yep,
about
or
Overwatch.
Diablo, StarCraft, any game they put out.
Dehaka released today. That's all.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We should have put that in the top stories.
Heroes of the Storm, that is.
There was a big old set of patch notes, too, and I heard mutterings on Twitter that apparently Illidan is really good again.
Yeah, Illidan is one of the ones that got a big overhaul in this patch. I think Gazlo got a bunch of buffs as well.
Yeah.
Tychus, I think, too, because he kind of... he's one of those heroes, like a lot of the original Heroes of the Storm heroes. The original characters are all kind of boring, but some of them are boring but still effective and still do really well, like Muradin. I find him really boring to play, but he's still super effective. But there's other old heroes like Gazlo and Tychus who are boring and also not effective, and I think they're revisiting a lot of those. And that's a lot of this patch is Illidan, Gazlo, Tychus, all of those old heroes that kind of...
Didn't they also introduce the band thing? Like you can ban certain characters or something?
Yeah, bans are in, which is something that has always been used in tournaments. It was just never supported in the base game, and it's in the base game now. So you can do it whenever you want, like just if you play ranked and so forth, there's picks and bans. I think people know what that is, maybe not, what a pick and a ban is.
Why don't you explain it?
Okay, basically part of like, tournament play is one of the things that's like you do before the match is to ban out heroes. And each team, I think, it depends on the tournament, I think it's usually like 2 bans each or something like that. You decide which heroes cannot be played in that particular match. So,
usually Stitches and somebody else.
Something like that.
Almost always Stitches.
I wouldn't say always.
There's that one team that loves to use Stitches.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of part of the strategy. It's like, okay, my team is good with these heroes, but the other team is really, really good at, for example, you know, we mentioned Illidan. So they are a great Illidan team. We don't know how to deal with their Illidan. We're going to ban Illidan so they can't play it. Then the other team's like, all right, well, these guys are amazing with the Lost Vikings, so we don't want them to use Lost Vikings. So they ban out Lost Vikings. And everybody has to pick new strategies depending on what heroes are available.
Okay. Even to the playing field.
Yeah, and that's always been in tournaments. Like, that has always been there. Even, you know, in League of Legends and Dota and all of that, those have been always there. In Heroes of the Storm, tournaments are using it too. It just wasn't supported in the base game, and now it is. Fairgrim asked, people actually play Stitches still? Yes, they do. In tournaments in particular, Stitches is pretty popular. I mean, his hook is powerful. If you get a good hook and you can gank somebody instantly, your team immediately has an advantage in a team fight. So Stitches is a popular one.
Okay, now emails. Sorry.
Now we are going to do some emails. This first one's from Alessandra, who's written to us quite a few times. Playing through the beta, has the story make you feel heroic? It's been a long time since I felt like a hero in WoW. The world gets worse. The lands are not ravaged and never fixed. The baby bears don't get rescued. I'm assuming that means the Hyjal thing. Good leaders die. Good characters are torn down or go mad. I can't really think of anyone I want to follow anymore, except, I guess, Varian, and everyone is certain he's about to die. And the villains can't be killed, only be banished, so are we heroes? Or just thugs, you know, looking for the next loot fix? So I'm going to let you, either of you guys want to answer that one?
Loot fix? No, wait.
I wrote a breakfast topic about this recently, and that, we've just left ashes behind us. Azeroth is kind of ruined. I don't, Legion in particular, it's hard to answer because I think the major plot arcs in Legion aren't implemented yet. At least it feels that way.
We haven't even gotten to like level 110 yet.
Right. Even like the intro stuff isn't done. I think at BlizzCon they told us about this like Pillars of Creation thing where we go to each of the zones and get one of the pillars and it kind of culminates into this whole thing. None of that is there. I mean, I've done Stormheim, High Mountain, Vel'Shara. I don't feel
you get the pillars. You get like the pieces. It's just nothing's done with them yet.
I got the Hammer of Khazgaroth.
How did you get a piece? I've never gotten any of that.
Yeah, did you finish the Hammer of Khazgaroth story in the High Mountain?
High Mountain's last quest has never worked for me.
Oh, okay.
It's like a battle of the snow plains.
That's not actually related to it. There's a point where you get in far enough in the story. I'd have to spoil it to tell you. Do you want
me
to?
Yeah, don't spoil it.
Don't spoil it, but that's the only quest I still have in High Mountain.
No, look around. Actually, ride around. Look around a bit.
There's a quest giver.
Then the quest flow is sufficiently bizarre that I don't have the quest.
He wasn't hard to find. He was on. He's on the Thunder Totem. He's just off to the side. He's right there.
There's also, let's see. Yeah, but I got the thing from Vel'Shara.
The Stormheim one I got. Yeah.
The Stormheim one you get. I think one
that one's actually
in a dungeon,
easy.
Right?
Yeah, it culminates in Halls of Valor, I think.
Yeah, Halls of Valor. That was like the whole point of doing the Halls of Valor is you prove yourself so that he gives you the thing that you need. But the thing is like once you get all of these pieces, you're supposed to take them to where do you take them to? Suramar?
I don't remember. Honestly,
I think Suramar is the one that's the level 110 zone. It's like once you finish the four initial ones, Azuna isn't open yet. But once you finish Azuna, Stormheim, High Mountain, and Vel'Shara. Once you finish those four, then you can go to Suramar, but you have to like unlock it or whatever first so that you can take the pieces in there. We haven't seen the story really progress towards endgame. And to be perfectly honest, the story at this point, it feels unfinished because I get the impression that a lot of the whole we're fighting the Burning Legion thing comes at level 110. It doesn't really show up while you're leveling.
You don't really see any demons out there.
No,
well, you do if you're a warrior. But
so much.
They just changed the warrior start. Like for the longest time, when you started as a warrior at 110, like 100, you like a crazy guy sent a raven to give you a quest.
Yeah.
But now, if you're a horde, Etrig shows up and is like, Sorfang's going crazy. He wants to go down there. And if you're Alliance, it's like, excuse me, Dinath Trollbane really would like to talk to you. And then it's either Sorfang or Trollbane giving you your marching orders. Like, yeah, they pulled the Trollbane's even like, yeah, they pulled me in for this. But things are getting pretty rough when they say come to Outland and say, hey, Dinath, we need you.
Interesting.
But they still haven't completely finished migrating the quest because once you do that quest, it still puts you in the old quest.
So
yeah,
like, they're still working on things.
Adventures in Alpha on the. I have my Rhett Paladin on Alpha, and I have Ashbringer. I did that like when the Alpha first started. I made this character. I have Ashbringer. They changed the intro quests for Rhett Paladin for the artifact, so I have Ashbringer, but I have a quest telling me I need to find Ashbringer,
and you won't be able to finish it.
I can't finish it because it sends me to the class hall as if it's sending me for the first time to talk to this guy. But I've already unlocked the class hall and unlocked the thing to upgrade Ashbringer. So the NPC is phased out of existence, so I can't do it.
Yeah.
Fun.
So it simultaneously treats me as if I do and do not have Ashbringer.
Speaking of it's alpha hijinks, Alex, we kicked your warrior out of the guild. Were you successfully able to retrieve them?
I haven't tried.
Okay.
I was getting so frustrated with, Alpha, I know it's buggy. I go in expecting it, but you can only go through so many bugs at a time before you're like, okay, I need a breather. This is driving me crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. But to tell you, one of the things I'll use as an example of something that has always been my experience in WoW. When I started playing WoW, my very first character, my wife and I came up with backstories for them that have pretty much held throughout the entirety of World of Warcraft's existence. We're talking about 11 years now. My character was a thug from the get-go. He was basically in it for the loot. He was a mercenary. Our guild was a mercenary company. That's what we considered ourselves to be. And even though most of those people don't play anymore, still enough of them to come by every so often that we kind of has an old, there's a kind of grizzled old veterans feel to it. Telling stories about the old days, watching kill videos from Burning Crusade and going, oh my God, I can't believe we killed stuff like that. So I don't know. I've never really felt heroic as such in WoW. I've always kind of felt I'm that's great, but I'm really only here because he drops a really nice sword. So I kind of feel like I'm the wrong guy to ask.
It's a little weird to me because especially in Warlords of Draenor, they make a big deal out of your character and how your character is the commander and they're really, really important and all this other stuff. And then when you start playing Legion, again, you're the pinnacle of your class. So you're chosen to wield this ultra powerful weapon and everything. And it's this should theoretically make me feel heroic, but if anything, it makes me feel much less heroic than, say, when I was stranded on the shores of Pandaria and basically had to fight for my survival. That felt more heroic to me. You know what I mean? Because things weren't being handed to me. To me, the heroism part of it is having to struggle. And when people hand you these uber powerful things and say, you're our last hope or whatever, it's it doesn't feel right. I don't know. There's just something, there's some kind of dissonant quality that isn't meshing for me there. I don't know why.
I did notice that they still call me Commander, and that makes sense. They should still call me Commander. I should have earned a rank. I want to name a character Shepherd now, so that'll just work out nicely. Yeah. But there is I don't mind that they're handing me the artifact because I understand that I'm still going to have to go out and do ridiculously dangerous things. But I do sometimes feel it almost feels like I've kind of moved to the point where there could be a Warcraft 4 and it could be about my character. Instead of Rexxar, it could be me going out and giving orders to units. And it just feels really strange sometimes. It takes away from that weird kind of renegade feeling I had back in the day where it was just yeah, it's great that there's a dragon taking over the kingdom, but does she drop any plate?
You know, it's funny. In the RTS games, that's kind of what it is. You aren't... I've just played Legacy of the Void. I'm not Artanis. Right? Artanis is the main character, but I'm not him. And Artanis will sometimes refer to me because I am commanding the armies. I'm the, I'm executor or whatever. I'm commanding the armies. I am kind of a participating party in this. So in a way, that's kind of what it is.
It's
a little
just,
weird when you think about it.
Yeah,
that Artanis is telling me to do stuff in real life.
I guess out of all of the expansions, the ones that I really appreciated the most were Burning Crusade, Wrath of the Lich King, and Mists of Pandaria. And I think it was for the same reasons every time. When you first step through that dark portal in Burning Crusade, you were just struck by how wrecked and ruined everything was. And then all of a sudden, you see this army of demons with this giant pit lord in front of you. And my first thought was, how the heck am I going to get around that? And the answer to that is, of course, fly over it. But, it felt like there was a struggle from the outset. And it was the same thing with Wrath of the Lich King. When you went to Northrend, it was really beautiful. But then you realized that it was also really deadly and weird and just, uncharted territory. Plus, Wrath also had the advantage of having all of those flashbacks to Warcraft 3, which I really enjoyed. miss a Pandaria, you're literally, you're shipwrecked on this new continent and you don't know what's going on there. And over the course of the first zone, you manage to screw everything up so badly that the rest of your leveling experience is struggling to fix the collateral damage that you inadvertently caused. So it's like, to me, those moments felt way more heroic than arriving on Draenor and somebody saying, yep, you're in charge.
I do agree with you. And again, the lands ravaged never fixed. Like, that's something I think about a lot with the game.
Just, yeah.
Everything is wrecked, and we don't revisit those places.
Well, that collateral damage from Cataclysm, I kind of wish it'd go away at some point.
Yeah, I mean, there comes a point, it's like, maybe Azeroth kind of sucks. Maybe we kind of wrecked it. Let's open a portal and take somebody else.
Let's go to Argus instead. I'm sure it's much better there.
Let's take a different planet. This one's broken.
Oh, yeah, I have different opinions, but I do want to move on to another email. So this next email is from Zazlo, pronounced Zazlo. So I'm okay with it this time. I've got a pronunciation guide. Enhancement Shaman, Moonrunner US. Greetings, Watchers. A longtime listener and proud Patreon supporter. I want to ask a question about following the story of an expansion. I have a difficult time keeping track of plot points and story beats due to my inconsistent memory. It makes understanding what's going on in an expansion difficult, and it's frustrating considering I love the lore of Warcraft. It's especially tough with the things like the legendary quest that is spread out over the entire expansion. I've read every quest in Draenor, and I can't tell you why we're raiding HFC. I'm going to stop for a second because that's one of the things that always bugged me. What do you mean you don't know why we're raiding HFC? It's where the evil guys are.
There are demons all over the place.
That one is really bothers me when people say, I don't know. Like, if you told me you don't know why we're raiding Highmall, I'd be right there with you. Because Highmall wasn't strategically important. There's no reason to go there. We could have just like said, yeah, okay, Ogre guys, you have fun. We're going to go kill the Iron Horde. But HFC is right where all the evil people are. That's why it's like saying, why is Superman going to Lex Luthor's house? Because that's where Lex Luthor is. That's where the guy is. So, yeah. Sorry, but I had to interrupt you there. So do you guys have any tips on how to keep track of what's going on throughout like the expansion? Thanks, Saslo. I'm going to let Ann go or Alex, whichever one of them wants to talk first.
I'm probably the wrong person to ask here because the last thing my memory is inconsistent. I absorb things and I catalog them all in my head, and I don't really have any tips on doing that because it's just something I do. I can tell you till I'm blue in the face, read all the quests and pay attention to what's going on. But if your memory, if you can't remember these things, then I don't know. Alex, maybe you have helpful tips?
In my experience, a lot of that isn't even really important to know. It's like Rossi said, why are we going to Hellfire Citadel? Because the bad guys are there. Why are we going to X-Raid? It's because there's a bad guy there. And they usually just tell you who the bad guy is. Like, the specifics of the legendary quests, I don't really know them either. I haven't done the one in Warlords for one, because it was really tedious. So what happens there, what proceeds after you have to collect 10,000 tablets, I don't know. But I don't really need to know, because the bad guys are in Hellfire Citadel, and that's where we go, because they're there, and we got to kill them.
What about
that's
you,
pretty much
Rossi?
Like, I'll say this. I honestly feel like Draenor is, in some ways, real easy to follow, in that it does not have a tremendously deep plot.
No.
And much of it is, like, I'm going to say this. You want to know the overarching plot of this expansion? Go find the 6 or 7 movies they made, and watch them.
Yeah, and the cinematics. You can actually, once you've viewed the cinematics in your garrison, there's a person you can talk to, and you can rewatch them all in order if you want to.
You know, once you've watched those, you pretty much have the basics of what's going on. We showed up, we knocked down the dark portal, we went to our various garrison-y places, we made garrisons, we then ranged out from our garrisons to fight the Iron Horde and also the demon guys, because they're bad too. We did so well at fighting the Iron Horde that the Iron Horde got taken over by the demony guys, and now the Iron Horde demony guys union are sitting in Hellfire Citadel waiting for us to come kick their butts, because that's what bad guys do in this game.
I forgot about that. The cinematics are actually really good to watch too, because they're just, it's like, it's a summary it's the culmination and summary of everything that you've done in that particular zone. The only zones that don't have them are Gorgrond and see, here I am talking about my memory and I can't remember the name of the zone with the bird people, the Arakoa.
Spires of Arrak.
Arrak, yeah.
And both Gorgrond and Spires of Arrak are more side story than they are main story.
Yeah, they aren't really too tied into that whole main story. All of the important beats that you need are tied into those cinematics. So find the dude in your garrison, talk to them, watch those in order, and then all of a sudden it should start to make a little more sense.
And usually, when there's a new patch, the patch notes usually start with some kind of recap or explanation of what's happening. Like, for the one with the Hellfire Citadel patch, there's probably a paragraph at the beginning. It's like, Gul'dan, blah, 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 kill the demons.
Like, for an example, if you were having trouble with, say, the Mists of Pandaria story, there's not as many cinematics, but there were a couple. And really, if you want to know what's going on in Mists of Pandaria, you would basically just play through the zones, and each zone basically has a self-contained little story that will tell you roughly what's going on. You know, like Dan mentioned, you know, Jade Forest pretty much says, oops. Jade Forest is literally a giant oops.
Uh-oh, what did we do?
You get warned even, like, if you're Horde, for instance, you find that Alliance guy and he's going crazy. And if you're Alliance, you fight that Orc Warlock who's like, you know, unleashing, what is that? That is not good. What is that?
And Tarazu will show up and tell you exactly what that is and why things are bad.
In the most condescending manner possible, so you don't listen to him.
Yeah, screw that guy.
But, you know, Tarazu is a perfect example of somebody who is right, but who needs to learn to modulate his message so people will listen to it. Because he's like, you moronic fools, idiots trampling in a land you don't understand. You're unleashing forces you can't comprehend. F off, buddy. Like, oh, it turned out he was totally right. Yeah.
Well, look, they've been isolated for 10,000 years. His social skills with other species is probably not where they need to be.
His social skills with his own species seem lacking.
Yeah. He
talks to Zuin like Zuin's like a nutcase.
They're
imbeciles.
He's not a bundle of sunshine, that's for sure.
Tarazu basically needs himself. He needs to have a media consultant.
Yeah.
What Mr. Zu is trying to say.
I mean, considering the whole Shaw of Pride thing, like Tarazu is the most prideful piece of crap I've ever met in World of Warcraft.
Which Shaw actually possesses him? The Shaw of Hatred?
It's hatred or anger.
Yeah, I think it's actually anger.
Yeah. Because
hatred's a one down.
Tarazu is trash.
But yeah, basically, if for the most recent expansions, there tends to be like you can digestible story chunks you can break it down and get through questing, and the cinematics and Warlords really make it a lot easier. Because you can go watch those in your garrison, or you can even find them on YouTube if you're having a hard time figuring out why are we doing X. You'll find out. The movies make it pretty clear. So, yep. Quite frankly, I'd say the entirety of why we raid Hellfire Citadel is revealed to you in the two videos with Gul'dan and Grom in them.
Like, yeah, you watch those two videos and Gul'dan kind of lays it all out for you.
Yeah, Gul'dan like spackles it on with a trowel. Excuse me, I have some evil exposition. Now I must coach you in it. There you go.
That was the most disgusting sound effect to be followed by I'm going to coat you in it or whatever you just said. That was disgusting.
And yet, rememberable. You won't forget that. You'll want
never
to.
Never forget that.
Okay, next one is from Luthor, a human paladin from Khadgar. And, you know, in the past I've mocked Luthor for his name because, you know, Superman villain. But he's taking it with good humor because, dear Lords of Lore, alas, Superman has defeated me, or has he? Muhahaha. I do have a real question this week, and I think it ties in nicely to the release of Chronicle and the latest Lore Watch podcast. I hope you can discuss this, my question, if I don't want to take up, you know, precious time on Lore Watch. Okay? We do take questions on Lore Watch, too. This could have been sent there.
As someone who is not on Lore Watch, but on this podcast, I think the time on this podcast is far more precious.
Yes, I know. We all know. Saturday night was running around on my mage doing achievements for my dungeons, and I encountered a few surprises. I ran the Arcatraz, apparently the first time ever. And what Adal says about the Legion and the Void Lords when he gives you the dungeon quests got me thinking. Adal talks about the necessity of the balance between the light and the darkness. Of the Void Lords are also, he also says that the Sargeras doesn't know what he is doing by trying to eradicate all life and undo the balance. The Naru must be connected to the Void or know something about them, at least some things, that Sargeras doesn't. What has Chronicle told us about this? What do you guys think know about it? Hope to hear from you. Forever yours, Luthor. Okay, hold on, this PS here. PS, Milhouse Manastorm on the Arcatraz is hilarious. That's true. That's probably why he keeps coming back. People loved him.
For the record, I guess we're going to start talking about Chronicle spoilers now. It's about really time.
Just do it.
It's been a couple of weeks. I think we're okay now. But if you don't want to hear about Chronicle spoilers, then skip forward.
I think Chronicle spoilers are silly in general. Like, you're in spoiling an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
It's not a novel or a movie. It's just like it's an encyclopedia. I can't spoil the fall of Rome.
What?
Some people want to like
Rome fell?
Rome fell?
Sorry, man, but it's been about almost 2,000 years. You've had plenty of time to go to Rome.
I've seen pictures of it. People have been there. The people are still there right now. Rome is there. What are you talking about?
Okay. So. Question. What is it?
Regardless, Chronicle is a new book, and as new material, I didn't really want to spoil it right away because some people didn't. There were Amazon. Remember we talked about how Amazon was sold out? A lot of people weren't getting their back orders, and most of them, I think, should have gotten their back orders by now, I think. So anyway, the Naru and the Void, there's not any direct correlation made in the book so much as like the light and the Void are set opposite each other. As far as that whole cosmos chart, there has to be light and darkness. It's like a balance kind of thing. Are the Naru aware of the old gods? Yeah, but we haven't really seen them do anything directly about them, like in game or anything. The only thing that we've seen to even indicate that the Naru have an interest on about anything that's going on Azeroth at all, the only thing that we've seen is when Adal shows up for Brittenbread and makes sure that he's cured of the plague and his soul goes where it needs to go so he doesn't come back a scourge.
Yeah, and for that matter, I mean, we still don't really know where the Naru come from.
No.
Like, the book tells you roughly where Titans come from. We know where the Titans' origins is. We know the origins of the old gods now. We know what the Void Lords are as opposed to Void Lords.
And we know what the origin of the Holy Light is.
Yeah, but we do and we don't. We know where the Order of the Silver Hand came from, why they, call it Tyr's Hand and stuff like that. But we don't know, like, how does the light really work? And why are the Naru of it?
And mechanics-wise, there's not really a big explanation about that, no.
We straight up don't know, like, the Naru's origins. We don't know where they come from. Or are they just made out of light? Do they just, like, pop out of it? Hi, I'm a Naru. We don't know. No idea. So how do the Naru know what Sargeras knows and doesn't know or what mistakes he is or isn't making? That's kind of up in the air. They made an assertion.
Chronicle definitely leaves some things. It leaves enough things deliberately vague that there's speculation to be had about all of this stuff. And I'm working on that because I have theories, but nothing solid yet.
In general, the book does make it fairly clear that, light and darkness do need to be balanced and that there's other forces balancing against each other too.
Yeah.
In fact, that the cosmology of Warcraft is all about forces and balance.
Yeah.
So, definitely, the argument is certainly that Sargeras is wrong. The Naru certainly thinks so. I would argue the Naru absolutely believes Sargeras is wrong. Sargeras doesn't think he's wrong.
No.
But, he wouldn't.
So, okay.
Yeah. Am I missing anything else, like you think?
No, I think that kind of covers it.
Okay. In general, Milhouse, however, he's a character who's maybe been overused over the years, but he is good in Arcadraz.
Yeah, they gotta beat that dead horse as long as they can.
I definitely think it's similar to what's his name? The Indiana Jones, Harrison Jones.
Harrison Jones. The thing is Milhouse, I mean, okay. So he showed up in Burning Crusade and the Architrives for the first time. And then we didn't see him again until Cataclysm, when he showed up and it was revealed that he was working for the bad dudes. And then he shows up again. Well, I mean, he's like a follower. Can you get him as a follower? Am I thinking of the wrong guy? Yeah, you can get him as a follower. But there's no real big story involved.
He gives you the toy that turns you into him.
Yes. And then he does show up again in Legion, in one of the dungeons. And that whole exchange is pretty entertaining.
Isn't there some weird thing where it's like canonical that Milhouse is twice as big as other gnomes? Or something really bizarre?
Not to my knowledge, but it may be that I just haven't encountered that tidbit.
I'm pretty sure that's a thing, that Milhouse is canonically larger than other gnomes. It's weird.
I don't know.
Keep talking, I'm looking it up.
Oh, he's looking it up. Okay. I mean, I always figured that he was bigger specifically because you need to be able to see him in the dungeon that he's in, like in the Architraz.
He's even larger than other gnomes in your garrison.
He's a gnome of unusual size, being about the same size as a dwarf. I'm getting this from Wallachy. I don't know where they got it from. Their source is not listed.
Oh, okay. See, if they don't have a source, I'm wondering where it came from.
It's weird. Anyway, I think Blizzard sometimes needs to let jokes go. I think Milhouse is funny, but every time they bring him back, he gets a little less funny.
Yeah.
Harrison Jones, funny reference when he first showed up.
Yeah. But they haven't designed a zone around Milhouse, so I think we're okay right now. Because we get him in small doses. Get it? Small.
But we've established he's a gnome.
But larger than average.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. We could probably move on.
I think we should make...
Apparently it's mentioned in Wowpedia as well, and they actually have, like, multiple sources at the bottom.
Okay.
So, for some reason, the Milhouse is canonically large.
I will have to go look into that later, because now I'm kind
apparently
of interested.
Apparently the Ultimate Visual Guide makes a reference to this.
Really?
That's apparently the case.
It's me.
You should talk to the people behind that book. Perhaps they know.
Hey, look, I didn't write everything in that book. I was the co-author, okay?
Yeah, what huckster worked on that?
Okay, next up is Zugzin, monk on Illidan. This one is based on a comment on a Reddit thread, so fair warning, I didn't actually read the original comment. I've since looked at other people's responses to it.
Yeah.
What do you think of Dave Kosak's comment about Azeroth and Azeroth's world soul never waking up, that its spirit is now in each of us? He later clarified that his comment wasn't canon, but it still seems like a pretty definitive statement to make off the cuff. Going that route seems to shut down massive story potential, so I hope it's not true. On that note, do we know if the Titan spirits and the Watchers are... this is just... Man, I should have put a spoiler warning up front here.
Yeah.
Whatever. The Titan spirits and the Watchers are still independent, you know, from the Watchers themselves. In other words, are the Titans actually, you know, dead, or are they simply, you know, bodiless? Zugzin, Orc, Monk on Illidan.
I think I know what happened here with what David Kosak said. He got Warcraft and Diablo confused. We are not, in fact, Nephilim in World of Warcraft.
Honestly, I mean, I like Dave. I think Dave's really funny and makes good comments and has generally been really nice when I've talked to him. But I think Dave is just as susceptible as any other human being to just going off when talking and not really, you know, realizing what he's saying until, you know, we go nuts. And I definitely feel like this is one of those cases where Dave was just making a comment, you know.
It was a very pretty piece of pose.
Yeah, I don't think
everybody
took really
seriously. And then he was like, no, wait, hold up, guys. This wasn't meant to be seriously. But yeah.
It's like the Christmas spirit is inside all of us. Therefore, we can't celebrate Christmas anymore.
That's not quite what he was
Christmas
saying.
Is dead, but it's inside of you.
You've eaten Christmas, you bastards. You ate Christmas. No, I didn't. Regurgitate Christmas now.
This is where you make that gross spitting sound effect again.
I've already done that once. I'm not going to do it again. That was for Goldon. Only Goldon makes that noise.
But, yeah, I mean, maybe Dave said something that was just, you know, off the cuff. Maybe he spoiled something he shouldn't have. Maybe he was being metaphorical.
Azeroth is all the friends we made along the way. No.
Azeroth is a warm feeling in your heart. This reminds me of an old Star Trek episode. Logic, it's a pretty flower that smells bad. What? But yeah, I don't think he was trying to, like, you know, leak secret details of Lex Warcraft expansions. I think he was just, you know, kind of talking. And people took it way more seriously. Because I think I got like 20 texts going, did you see this? And I'm like, guys, it's just something Dave said on Twitter. And said on Reddit. Until it actually comes out in a book, you can relax.
I hope Azeroth doesn't wake up because we live there.
Yeah. But I mean, we don't even know what would happen if it wakes up. Does it like crack open like an egg and, you know.
It's like an armadillo just unfurls and we all fall off.
Well, no, because it's so big that it could unfurl. Shoulders. We'd still live on it. We wouldn't know any different. If we, like, instead of like the world being on the back of a turtle, it's on the back of some guy or girl. I think Azeroth's
swimming through the galaxy.
On the back of some guy.
Some dude swimming through the galaxy. We're just hanging out.
I'm going to call it now. Azeroth is almost certainly a woman. Like 99% sure Azeroth is a woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. For one thing, the Titans need another woman. Because there's just one girl in the group. She's like, seriously, when am I getting a sister? Amethu, look, they hatched the way they hatch. Are you sure you're not just looking for the dudes? Look, I kind of did. I want another woman in this group. All right, look, this new one. That'll probably be a woman, right? I hope so. God, it's lonely around here. You guys are pathetic. And Sargar, stop leering at me. I'm not leering at you. I'm just thinking about killing everything all the time.
All the time. So yeah, the Titan spirits and the Watchers, are they independent from the Watchers?
One of them's very independent from the Watchers.
Huh?
One of them is extremely independent.
One of them is very independent from the Watchers, yes, but I don't think the way that it was phrased in Chronicle, it seemed to indicate that it was sort of like the last vestiges of their power, not necessarily their consciousness. Like they aren't.
Well, there was that bit that they got overwhelmed. Like they saw all the things. They basically, the problem seems to have been, if based on my reading of Chronicle, that you couldn't fit all of a Titan's being into a keeper.
No,
there just wasn't enough room. There wasn't enough data storage in the keepers for all the big Titan download.
No.
So, what happened? I don't know.
Good question. That wasn't really like hammered down or defined either. So who knows? It's another one of those open-ended bits. There's a lot of those in Chronicle, but they're good ones. So you know.
Anne and I have enjoyed Chronicle. Alex, of course, has not read it.
Yes.
And does not care.
Nope.
Okay, this one is from Klug. Remember Klug, everybody?
Klug!
Hi, Klug. Klug has quite possibly the best name of any orc. Dear Watchers, I've been slowly leveling a character with a friend who is very a casual player. We run with a Kata version of Zul'Gurub, and we got nostalgic over the original version. Remembered wiping numerous times and finally seeing the Tiger Mount drop only to lose the role and never seeing it drop again. My question this week is, what's your favorite raid and why? Or what raid got you hooked on WoW? You know, as always, keep up the great work, Klug. I'm going to let Grumpy McGee go first because you know, he's all upset about lore conversations.
So. I still think to this day that the best time in World of Warcraft raiding was the split between Serpentrine Cavern and Tempest Keep. Both of them at the same time, kind of a diversity in locations, but each location was still like consistent within itself. They had easy bosses, they had hard bosses. Kael'thas and Vash were hard but doable. They were tough, but it was all execution. Like once you got it down, you got it down, and that felt really satisfying. You were overwhelmed at first, but you saw very quickly that it all kind of came together. And having both variety in what you're looking at for 6 months at a time, and having those hard but doable bosses felt really good. I haven't really had that feeling since then. I think Karzan would have been really good if it was about half as long. I don't know how about you guys feel about that. I always feel like Karzan has a lot of filler. And Rossi?
I have my own things I want to say, so.
Oh, okay. Well, go ahead, Rossi.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I'm just saying, that's why I wasn't answering what he was saying, because I have things I'm going to say.
Well, I asked you a question about Karzan. Like, how did you guys feel about Karzan in particular? Did you think, lot of people love Karzan, but I felt it was just too long.
I don't feel like it was too long.
Karzan was actually one of my favorite raids. I find it interesting, though, that you mentioned the whole split thing between Serpentrine and Tempest Keep, because that was the one period in the game that I really didn't. That's when I was taking my break from that, and I was leveling my rogue. So I raided with Karazhan on my priest, and it was fun. I loved the zone, and I loved the flavor of the zone, and I loved the feel of it, and I loved the fact that we were finally in Medivh's Tower, because that was one of those things that had always plagued me during vanilla. I'm like, what's in there? I want to know what's in there. And we finally found out. But I didn't start raiding again in Burning Crusade until Black Temple. Black Temple was out. Black Temple and Caverns of Time with Archibon.
Hyjal,
yeah, but I mean, Archibon was the final boss. Anyway, that was when I came back in, was to do those. So I missed that. I missed that whole Serpent Shrine and Tempest Keep thing, because by the time I got back into raiding, nobody was doing those zones anymore. However, I liked Burning Crusade's thing where we did have like two different raids that we could do, and I wanted to see more of that. We didn't really get that much with Wrath of the Lich King because it was pretty linear. It was like you did Naxxramas, and then you went to Olduar, and then you went to the Round Room, and then you went to Ice Crown Citadel. Like, you, it kind of went in order. Cataclysm kind of brought that back a little bit. There were a couple of different raids, but for whatever reason, they didn't quite capture the feeling that I got from like doing the multiple ones. Because, I mean, we did Hyjal and we did Black Temple kind of pretty simultaneously. We were doing both for a while. And then once everybody got everything that they needed off of Archimon, we stopped doing that. But
The bright colors in Serpent Shrine and Tempest Keep.
Serpent Shrine? No, there's no bright colors in Serpent Shrine.
I like that it was all blues in Serpent Shrine.
There are dark cave areas in Serpent Shrine, but there's also bright blue areas. Yeah. And you have the bright reds and yellows of Tempest Keep. And just having color felt really cool to me. And I hate when a dungeon is just dark. Serpent Shrine has dark areas, but it also has a bright green and bright blue and all that.
Yeah, I liked the whole watery kind of theme thing going in there. It was nice. Cataclysm, I think part of what kind of threw me off a little bit from Cataclysm was that everything was red on red on red and red, unless you were in Twilight Citadel, in which case it was all purple.
They've kind of, like, Burning Crusade is like, there are lots of different colors, and you're always looking at something different. And a lot of these raids after that seems like they just pick a color and stick with it the whole time. Like, here's everything is black, here's everything is red, here's everything is purple.
Well, I'll say this much. First off, I think, like, in terms of how the fights actually were, with the exception of a few, like, I think you can argue that Vash and Kale and Illidan to a lesser degree and Kil'jaeden to a lesser degree were mechanically interesting fights. In general, the raids were terrible compared to what they came after. Wrath of the Lich King's raid fights were much better, more complicated, more interesting, more sophisticated. Olduar, I mean, Olduar for me in a lot of ways, Olduar is one of those raids that goes up there on my list. Karazhan's below it. I actually think Olduar's better.
Yeah.
I actually like Ice Crown a lot. Like, going back and looking at it and remembering tanking it, especially tanking it on the highest difficulty, I remember a lot of stuff that was really sophisticated and as a tank challenged me. I'm going to say this, though. One of the worst things that happened in my mind to raid design was the introduction of challenge modes harder difficulty modes. And the reason for that is because of gear inflation.
Yeah.
Like, that really inflated gear. That's, however, got nothing to do with your question, so I'm ignoring it. But that is something I would put out there. Burning Crusade is the advantage of not having that. You did Vash until you beat it. You didn't do Vash until you beat it, and then do it again with new... Like, imagine if, seriously, you were doing the Vash fight, you finally got her down, and then it was like, okay, next week we start Heroic Vash, where they have two new adds, and the floor splits open sometimes, and snake tentacles grab you.
And you have to change your macro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I don't like, and that BC was totally devoid of. But I'll say this, I really think Cataclysm... and especially Dragon Soul, with the benefit of hindsight and the benefit of going through it now at max level and just seeing it, Cataclysm and Dragon Soul had some of the most interesting fights.
Yeah.
And I actually loved Spine of Deathwing, because I was tanking Spine of Deathwing, and I was a warrior tank on Spine of Deathwing.
It was very chaotic, but it was kind of like...
My job was run around and tick off a whole lot of goo.
Yeah.
Then just run around and, he's about to get caught by all the goo. leap of faith him out. Okay, now heroic leap back in. It just, that kind of stuff. Since that's my fight perspective for pretty much every expansion until Warlords, at the end of the expansion, I ended up tanking.
Yeah.
That's the way it was in every expansion. So I always ended up tanking these fights. Like, I tanked Vosh and Kale, and I will never hate a fight as much as I hated tanking Kale, because this is my experience tanking
Kale Thos.
Look at the floor, equip the shield, use the shield macro so that you don't get killed.
Yeah.
That's tanking Kale Thos. Do that like 35 seconds. If you screw it up once, the raid wipes.
I think probably, though, on the list of favorite raids, I have to throw Blackwing Lair in there, just because I have so many memories of doing that in vanilla, like fond memories and fun stories of my raid guild just being completely insane, and the insane things that we used to do to, like, do the encounters in there, like the whole having to get all 40 people out of the zone and over into Upper Blackrock Spire so that we could buff them all with mind control and the fire resist buff so that we could finally beat Veilstraws. You know, I mean, there was just like
my Blackie raid Blair never used whatever. That,
huh?
Because it was my raid never used that fire resistance buff from Blackrock Spire because it was so annoying to buff 40 people with it. Just like, forget it. We're gonna do it without it.
Yeah, it was really annoying. And there was a point there, I think it was probably like, oh, I don't know, a good 3 weeks after we had Veilstross on farm, we finally stopped using it. But to get the fight down, we did that. And then like Razor Gore was just fantastic once you got everything together already. And then the whole thing like with the scepter for AQ40, I mean, I have a lot of memories about that. And farming bugs forever to get our one warlock, the scepter, before the Alliance got it, and we didn't. But it's okay, because she got it, and she got her bug anyway. So
here's the thing with me and raids. I admit, I have a very short attention span.
Yeah.
Really short attention span. Like, it is bad. So my favorite raids are the ones where there's areas that look very different, behave very different, or you're going from, you know, like going, oh, we did our Boston Serpent Shrine, now we're going to go try something in Tempest Keep. It looks different. It's short. Those are my favorite. So my least favorite are the ones that are really, really long. Like Karazhan, I enjoyed it because the bosses are so different, but there's that section in the library where you're just grinding through trash.
Yeah.
That ruins Karazhan for me because you're in that one spot so long. Or Ulduar, I don't like it because it's so long. My attention span means I can't appreciate these long ones. I get bored.
See, with Karazhan, we always, like, one night we would get up to the library point. Like, that was the natural halfway point. So we'd go to there, and then we'd come back the next day, and we'd do the library and the rest. And it felt almost like a second raid.
We just couldn't schedule people that many nights in a row, so we just had to do it all in one go, or else we wouldn't be able to do it that week.
Yeah, doing it all plus at once, I could see that being really long.
Plus, the problem with Karazhan was people were running it on all their alts to get badges. But I think at this point we're running out of time.
Like, yeah,
we've talked quite a lot, so I'm going to ask Anne to give us our.
Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And we could totally use more non-Warcraft questions if you guys have them. Yes.
It's true. We could talk about non-Warcraft things. That would be great. This has been Blizzard Watch. I'm Matthew Rossi. I'm the host. With me have been Ann and Alex. And thank you very much for coming by and letting us talk to you about Blizzard games this week. We will see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.